Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech-language pathologist.
Hi, and I'm Kate Hensler, developmental interventionist. You're in the great Commonwealth of Kentucky.
You usually say state, don't you, or you just usually say Kentucky?
I say Louisville, Kentucky, but I was thinking Commonwealth of Kentucky today. Oh, you're a laugher. Who's that laughing, Laura?
This is Kinsetta Pryor, and I'm a mom. We have a special guest today. I'm so glad you already introduced yourself, Kinsetta. I can tell that we're going to love you already because you just jumped right in there. But we are so happy to have her with us today, and the reason that I asked her to be on the show is she sent me this great kind of set of questions on my website at teachmetotalk.com, and so we're just going to let her introduce herself and talk about her concerns with what's going on with her little boy and give us her history, and then I'm sure Kate and I will interrupt you 100 times asking you questions about specific things, so then after you give us your little history, we'll give you our advice and our opinions.
Oh, perfect. And thank you guys for both taking the time to not only answer my question on the email, but take time today to go through my concerns with Ryan. My son's name is Ryan. He started early intervention. We're in the state of New York at the age of 2 because primarily he was speech delayed. He was only saying 5 words at the time, and he's the youngest of 5.
Wow.
Yeah, so at first I
was... Whoa!
Now he's 2.5. We did get two days speech and 2 days of special ed interventions, and we've been doing that for 6 months, and tomorrow actually is the day that I meet with early intervention to discuss his progress and then to make some concerns related to his transition to school district CPSE, because right now under the age of 3 he's in early intervention. And what I've experienced so far is, like, at 2, let me tell you a little bit about Ryan and why we got, not only was he speech delayed, but he had this little weird behavior he was doing. It was more of a running behavior. He would, and it wasn't consistent, but he would line, like, it didn't matter what they were, but they were objects. Like, so it could be trains, it could be a piece of garbage, it didn't matter. He would, in my kitchen, he would line it up, and then he would run and, like, almost dip his head when he got to the object to, like, acknowledge it.
Right.
And he would do it 2 or 3 times, and then he would get diverted or he would do something else. It would disappear, and then it would come back. So what I did was I videotaped it, and I, between the speech delays, and at that age it was hard even with social skills to really see, because it was a loving baby and he always never had issues with cuddling, but I took it to a neurologist, and he it basically was just like a consult. They didn't really do any kind of testing. They just said, I felt that it was like he was too young, give him a chance to, you know, respond to the early intervention. You're doing all the right things, Mom. Just watch him. So my concern on email was, okay, everything points you to the direction of early intervention. The earlier, if you catch it, the better. But as I go through this, I feel like there's some hesitancy. And I understand it. It's fluid. I know that you can't really, you know, but yet you want to do it early, so to get services. So that's kind of how I started with the question and how to transition. Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. I'm just confirming what you're saying.
Yeah. So,
and so you were just concerned because a lot of times you felt like the professionals that you were seeing with him were so hesitant to give you an official diagnosis, or they were hesitant to give you services.
Well, it was, no, they gave me services, but
okay,
are the services the right services if they miss the diagnosis? Because I just in the grocery store last night, and, you know, in the getting fish food, and my girlfriend came over, and my sister-in-law, and she had her friend, make a long story short, she started to tell her story about her son, who, now fast forward, he's in sixth grade, and he was having some sensory issues young, which she went to, you know, doctor after doctor said, oh, it's just transition to foods. And not until recently did she get to the right people who said, you know, probably back then he was on the spectrum, had they dealt with it the right way instead of just giving him services that were probably not helping him. I don't know.
Right.
It's just I keep hearing stories like that, and I, as a mom, get nervous because I'm like, I want to do the right thing now, but yet when I go there, I'm either felt with, he's too young, he's fine. Like my even just 2 days ago, before I get to this meeting tomorrow, because my meeting's tomorrow, I said to her, listen, and she's my I call special ed, so I would, so that's like you, Kate, right?
Right.
So,
right.
I said to her, listen, I really appreciate everything. And he has made tremendous progress. He really has.
Right.
But what if you're wrong? And
right.
She's like,
so
she
doesn't think he's on the spectrum, and you suspect that he is on the spectrum, and you want to know if he is on the spectrum, and if he's not getting the intensity of services or the frequency
right.
of services, you're afraid that he's going to have lifelong issues because you didn't do enough of it too.
Yeah, behavioral issues, and even
right.
this morning my pediatrician said, he looked at him and he said, well, you know, everyone is, you know, the diagnosis rate is up and blah, blah, blah. And he said it tends to be diagnosed when your kids are just off. And he goes, don't worry about the diagnosis, just get the services. And
right.
I said, but you know what? I can't get the services unless I get the diagnosis.
Right.
So it's, I don't know.
Have you seen anyone that officially kind of looked at the specific diagnostic criteria for autism, Concetta, and said, okay, he has 5 out of these 7 or, you know, how many ever?
No.
No. And that's what you want to do. You want to have, and that don't you think that would make you feel better if you had just a definitive
yes or no?
Yeah.
I think, and I think it got to this point because I got, you know, like even the speech language, he said, I wish I could take you to see someone, yet I can't get, like now I can't get him into this preschool that can be provided through early intervention, because I think I do need a diagnosis to get qualified for that, but I'm not exactly sure. So I'm going to just go and do it for myself, I think, but it could take months. And here in New York,
right.
I just called 3 centers in the last 3 days to do the autism screening,
uh-huh.
and we're all talking, it's not that far away, but, you know, April is, it's kind of long.
And in the life of a toddler, in the life of a toddler, 3 months is kind of a long time.
You think?
And it is really expensive, too, when you feel like, gosh, you early intervention people could just help me out here.
Why can't you just screen them? Why can't you just, and that's what I said to the other day, why don't you just screen them or put them in an early intervention preschool where the people who know this stuff can look at him while he's the social aspect, too. And I was told, no,
right.
you can't do that. And
so
like,
they
don't.
Does the system not have psychologists that service kids through early intervention?
Yeah, they do. But here we go. I know I have I really do trust people. Like my girlfriend said, don't use this agency. I'm at the point where I don't, like, I know it's bad as a mom, but you get so freaked. Like, I want to get the right person because I don't want to go through that story of those 2 moms I had. I went to this person,
right.
to this person.
Right.
I don't want to bounce everywhere. I just want to go to the person who has seen so much that could say, Ryan, you know, 2 hours, you know what, this is what I think. And I can
right.
walk away going, you know what, I'm going to go with her or him. And
right.
it sounds like it's hard to find that.
So do you not have a place, do you not have a psychologist or a place that you can do that right now through early intervention so you don't have to pay for that? Or is your provider not willing to give you that referral?
No, they're willing to give me the referral. I heard, like, the ones that I'm going through moms right now that I'm trying to network enough because I really haven't had
okay.
this issue. So right now I called the McCartan Center in New York, and they're, like, I think she said it was like $1,450 that's
mm-hmm.
out of pocket.
Mm-hmm.
Early intervention obviously doesn't have them on there. The Cody Center is another one that I hear is really, really good and spotted it for some people, really, if it was, they were right on target. That's another, they're all expensive. The one, I heard the ones on my agency list, hit or miss, like if you get, and I'm going to go through that process because I think I have to.
Right.
But I'm afraid that I'm going to be disappointed. And I know I just got to get pushed through as a mom, just, you know what, because if this is important to him through, it's just so frustrating.
Right. And so does your special ed person that works with him and the speech, and he's getting speech too, you said, do either one of them see red flags for autism?
You know, it's funny. The special ed teacher is adamantly like, not adamantly. She was respectful the other day. She said, you know what, you need to do it for yourself, but I don't believe he's autistic. She says, if he did, he wouldn't be progressing. Remember, I think I asked that on your question. Like, autism,
yeah.
People on the spectrum do progress. I mean, he has gone from
Let me just stop you, because some of the children that I've seen that have made the most progress have been children with autism. Don't you think, Kate?
Yeah, I don't really agree, even though I share the same discipline with her. I would say, no, that doesn't – I mean, I'm not saying your child is. Obviously, I don't know him.
Right,
but
we don't know. Yeah.
Just the fact that he's made good progress does not negate the fact that he could be on the spectrum, to me. I would never make that statement.
Me
okay,
either.
And then the other statement I heard, which I didn't necessarily agree with, was why put him in a special ed preschool because of the whole, quote-unquote, role model issue?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That I still haven't figured out in my head whether that's justified or not.
Well, and I will, you know, I have had children that I feel like are really borderline that may not have, like if they had gone to one person, they would have gotten a spectrum diagnosis or another person not, or they had some quirks and didn't really meet all the specific diagnostic criteria, who were huge imitators of behavior. And I have cautioned some moms with children like that that you may want to go with a preschool program that's not special education related so that he can have more typical peer models.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's what she's probably trying to say.
That's exactly what she said.
Right. However, I think it is so program-specific, and we're certainly not going to get into talking about specific programs here in Louisville, but there are a couple of programs that really do specialize in treating children on the spectrum. And I have had children that whose moms wanted them to go there, and I've said, you know, let's rethink this a little bit. I think we can find a better placement for him. And, again, I think it's so child-specific and so program-specific, but I can almost defend that take on things, because for children that I've seen on my caseload, I've said, ooh, I'm not sure that's a great placement for him, but I always give not just one reason why, lots of reasons why, so that a mom can kind of take that information and keep that with her while she's making that decision so that she knows exactly, you know, what I'm saying. The special education program that you're talking about wanting him to do, is it just for children who've been diagnosed with autism?
No, it has. They have two classrooms, the self-contained and the inclusion. And from what she said, I only did one tour, and I don't know if I got everything, but it sounded like there's more. Primarily, she said the kids here are speech delayed, a lot of occupational. They don't know if they're on this, but I know they have an ABA room, but we didn't get into that because obviously he doesn't have a diagnosis. And every time I say, you know, well, if he did, both the speech and the language do unify and say there's no way I would ever recommend this kid for ABA. Speech pathologist thinks if he is, he's on the spectrum, but he's high, he's going to be high up there. High functioning, but
right.
He obviously they can't. So would you think that I should just, before I even say anything tomorrow, I have no, it's 24 hours before this thing happens. there's no way I'm going to get just the whole role model and the fact that I really do need, at 2.5, they can and I should just go through that evaluation
see plenty of kids here who get diagnosed at 2.5. By Louisville, Kentucky standards, that is not particularly, I mean, it's young, but it's not too young.
No, you know, I think you've got several issues. It's not just should I get him diagnosed or should I not get him diagnosed. That's one thing, and that's going to be something that if they can't or won't help you follow through that diagnostic process, just from hearing you talk about it today, you've got to do that on your own so that you don't drive yourself crazy.
I know.
Yeah.
All I keep hearing is he's doing so great. He's sitting. He's taking parent-directed activities a little bit more. But, you know, yes, the speech is coming up and the behavior is coming down, but they're still there. And that's what I think I feel like, okay. And
How verbal is he? How much is he talking?
He's talking, he has a lot of, he's got well over 50, even probably more single words. I hear them daily. And he's just starting now within the last 2 weeks. He's got a lot of rote phrases like, there it is, I found it, daddy upstairs. You know, like he's putting together some.
Right.
More cookie. Sometimes I'll have to prompt him to do the more cookie. He was beginning to sign immediately, like within 2 weeks. He did pick up the sign language a lot. Any points, but sometimes he just like, you know, during a session, which is, you know, he'll start to play with a toy and he'll like it. And once he feels like he's done, he'll say, all done. And he literally will put his head on the table and like, I'm not coming back. Like, it is like he's saying to you, you know, screw you, Ma, I don't want to do this. And we just laugh. And sometimes we can get him back, and sometimes we can't. And he has mastered what she calls passive resistance. That's what she says to me. I go, what is that? Like, he will literally zone. And then if we say, Ryan, clean up, he comes right back and he sings clean up.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And we can get him to do everything. And it's like, what the is that? I mean, I can't figure him out. And then I put him down, and then he does that running thing, and then he goes and plays with his brother. He's social, and then he's not social. So I can't – he's like a puzzle to me. Yet.
You really need somebody with some really strong diagnostic experience who can not only tease this out, but that can explain it to you and say, these are the reasons why or why not, you know, I don't think that he qualifies for this diagnosis, and can give you alternative things. Like, and so many children we get that we might say, okay, he's a little quirky, but I would never really think he's on the spectrum, although Kate and I are pretty liberal with that.
Mm-hmm.
Behind the scenes. But, and, you know, and I don't necessarily think that that diagnosis is, you know, life-ending, and, you know, I don't think it's as dire as so many professionals do, and are, you know, it's, that are so hesitant to give that diagnosis. So, again, I'm kind of coming, and I'm not from a mom's perspective talking about that, you know, with your own child, that can just be heartbreaking for some moms to hear that diagnosis, so they so shy away from it.
Yeah.
Which is not what you're doing at all.
No, I'm actually the other side of it. Like, said, you're just on the other side.
Right, but you need to get somebody who is going to be able to talk to you about this and say, these are the reasons why, and help you work that out in your own mind.
Yeah,
so
and I'm with
you.
Like, I'm not even so focused. Like, I can understand. I don't really care. I do care about the diagnosis, but I just want the right thing for him.
Right.
And it seems like you can't get the right thing until you really know what really is. Like
exactly.
You said, figure out what it is. And
you know, what my point was when I started this a second ago, and I lost my own train of thought here. I mean, we have children that we think, okay, she's not really on the spectrum, but she has pretty significant, you know, auditory processing challenges. She has some sensory stuff. She certainly has some receptive and some language delays.
Yeah.
So just because you can have all those little separate pieces but not really qualify for the big autism diagnosis, but you need somebody who's going to sit down with you and say, this is what I saw and this is what I think. So I would, regardless of if you can work out how to fund that, go ahead and do that from a private, reputable center, because I think you're going to be happier with your results then.
Yeah, and I'm not going to bounce around and get off.
Right. So that's one thing. The second thing is I'm not sure that they've still made a case for you not to do the preschool stuff. I don't think that, I mean, can they keep you from doing that if that's what you really, really, really want to do for him?
I don't know. I'm going to find out. That was my question tomorrow as I thought through is going to be, why can't he's not three, entitlement in New York, I guess, is till August he can stay in early intervention. What is the reason why he can't go to preschool right now?
Right.
We call these people service coordinators, and that's kind of the case manager who handles your case. Do you have the equivalent of that?
Yeah, like a service, I do. An ongoing, they call them? I think that's maybe
ongoing, ongoing service coordinator, yeah. Those folks are perhaps less vested in the service. I mean, they're interested, but it may be, and I don't want to say this because I certainly don't know it, but it could be that there's a catch where if your Ryan went to the preschool, they might lose the special ed, or they might lose the speech.
They will. Yeah, the special ed will go away, and I think definitely.
And I speak from, you know, I've been there, and it is like when you think you're doing well with the kid, and you think you're helping the child, and you know, and then they're going to go, and I mean, I always say you got to do what's best for your child, but there is a part of you that kind of feels A, hurt, and B, like, oh, I don't want that to happen. But she's not necessarily objective because she's going to lose seeing your child, and she thinks he's doing well, and it sounds like he is. But your service coordinator would probably be a better person to really kind of have a heart-to-heart about that, you know.
Yeah, because you know what? You make a huge point. I mean, and I think I caught on to that yesterday. She said to me, I'm the only one of the only moms that talk to her, and I do call her a lot about Ryan. I'm probably on the other end of it. And I know she, but it's so, like, you get into a meeting, and I've already given a heads up to her that I'm not necessarily in agreement with where she stands with Ryan. But if she's advising the ongoing and or the person who makes the decision, it's so hard, you know, I have to really, I guess, be that much more stronger or and or armed with the, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Sorry, Laura, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, have you had a conversation with your ongoing person, your service coordinator, and said, I'm not on the same page with her, and this is what I want to do? Have you been, because if you could give her a big heads up about that before the meeting, then it wouldn't be like new for her.
Yeah, I called, actually, they told me to call. We have an ongoing and the person at the county who actually makes the ultimate decision, and she was here to look at Ryan in the when he was two. So
right.
I called her and I said, this is where my head, and I know her name is the special ed is Kathy. I said, you know, Kathy's not on with me. And I did exactly what you just did. And she was, I have to say the conversation probably was okay, but I think she was like, you know, trying to push it. Just go down. She kept saying this to me, go down to the register. Go down and register him with the district. You need to go down and register him with the district. And I go, why is she pushing me so hard to the district? I'm just trying to get him into preschool. So I go, why do you keep doing this to me? And she said, because then he'll get another evaluation. And all my head's going. I'm like, all right.
She's trying to help you by saying that. I think she's trying to help you. I think she's trying to say, get another professional to say that he needs to do this preschool program, and then I will have some leeway with this other person, because it sounds like to me she's saying, you know, I'm trying to do everything I can to help you with this, but you're going to have to get another professional to back you up.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, she said, I can't give you any more services unless, I don't know if it's true or not, but that, like Kate was saying, I don't know if that's predicated on why I can't get into the preschool, but it sounded like that to me, like I can't approve more services unless you get another evaluation, and so that's kind of where we're at for tomorrow, and whether that preschool should be a special ed role model problem or like you said, typically a private preschool with maybe a special ed shadow or something like that. And those are my,
well, if it's through early intervention, then you're not going to have to pay for that. And if it's a private service, you would have to pay for that. And if that's a concern, you just need to put it out there like that too, because I do think service coordinators, because usually their social work people are they really respond to that too. Don't you think so, Kate? That's a concern. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I think you should
just say that.
It's
so funny, but I think I wrote that, I did lose my job in this whole, like, in the whole economy thing. But
yeah.
I mean, it was so happened that, so right around the time Ryan, I meet so many mothers that have that had. So, and then what I'm finding when I go around to these little preschools, that inclusion class that has seven typically developing children with seven special, there was three, the special ed teachers are there, they can help Ryan. I mean, I'm not in denial that he's not typical.
Right. And I think you have answered all your own questions with what you should do and what you should say. And there's no way I'd be able to sit on the other side of the table and say that you're not making a very good argument.
But I needed to hear from you too. I needed to hear from somebody else, because I'm kind of, you feel almost like I'm doing this on my own. Like I'm not, I don't really have that sounding board other than the people that I'm going to sit across from and have this somewhat brainstorm. Yet there's it's difficult.
It is difficult. And, you know, we're at a disadvantage because we haven't seen Ryan, you know, so we don't know exactly what's going on with him. But, you know, as a mom, I think you have very valid, intelligently worded points, and I would just ask for what you think he needs and then be willing to back that up and just go for it. And
just the fact that you said, because I kept, even with your email response that autistic children, whether on the spectrum, low or high, do improve, because that was, for the longest time, if there's any moms out there listening, I kept hearing, and I believed that he couldn't, not that he is, and I don't know yet, but that's what was kept being told to me, was that, no, if he was, he wouldn't be responding.
Oh, my gosh.
Totally
that's,
disagree.
That's crazy.
That's why they're willing to pay for early intervention, because it really does work. And like Laura said, sometimes not every kid that has had a confirmed diagnosis would I say, oh, it's a miracle night and day, but lots of them. Lots of them. Most of them.
Yeah, when you go in and you
mm-hmm.
do the right intervention, it makes a big difference, and they make progress. And, again, it depends on the level that a kid starts with. But like you said about Ryan, you feel like even if he is on the spectrum and your speech pathologist said he's high functioning, so heck yeah, you're going to expect him to make progress and to continue to do great if you're, and especially when you provided the right services. And it sounds like you've identified a program that you really, really wanted to be in and have very valid reasons for thinking that that's a good placement for him. So my advice would be to state your case tomorrow, stand your ground, and then mm-hmm. if they won't do it, follow through with your appeals process, because Kate used to do the service coordinator job as well. And doesn't she have a right, Kate, if she disagrees with what services they want to offer? Can't she appeal that? Isn't there, I mean, is that?
Well, she certainly could have in Indiana, and she certainly could in Kentucky. So I am assuming that's a federal part of the law that states really the laws are very child-friendly, and they really are to kind of provide the services that are necessary for your child to make, you know, the best possible progress. And so even though you may be feeling kind of like you're hitting a brick wall, yeah, really the laws are in your favor. Typically they don't want to really have a big battle over it. And sometimes just the threat of the appeals process can help people to see it a different way. But normally when things go to appeal, parents do get what they want.
Yeah, mm-hmm. okay. Well, and I hope it doesn't. I hope it goes well. And I think it will if it just, you know.
I think it will, too, because you are doing your homework and you're getting prepared to say what you want to say. But, you know, I do think that if it comes to tomorrow, you saying, I don't agree with this and I don't think that you're fully meeting his needs and you haven't really given me good reasons why, you know, it's not like the special ed preschool program has turned you down. They haven't told you that Ryan's not eligible to go.
No,
and
I
so
actually called before, yeah.
So
said,
I think
two openings right now. She goes, I can take them now.
Yeah, so I think that, and that's what you should say, is they haven't denied me. They haven't said he's not eligible, you know, and really go from that way. And I really would throw in the economic concerns about that as well, because I think everything you can use to build your case, you know, is going to be something that you should pursue.
She's not going to like me tomorrow. Ooh. But you know what? I even gave her a heads up.
That's
okay. I know, because I think Kate hit it. I really do. I think she's come across some tough economic times, and I do think she thinks she's doing well, and she loves Ryan, and she loves coming here. And
It's hurting her feelings. It's hurting her feelings. And on some level, she thinks, I'm not good enough, and I have poured out my heart and soul into this little boy, and look how good he's doing, and she wants to dump me. You know?
And
so her feelings are hurt.
Yeah. She says, I'm, what does she say to me? You have way too high expectations for him. I said, no, I don't. I really don't.
Oh,
did you say this is number five? I'm kind of familiar with what this looks like.
I said
You're saying I think he might be autistic. That doesn't sound like you know, I don't know. That just sounds like it's contradictory to what I'm hearing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, you're not a mom that's saying there's nothing wrong with him.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Yeah.
No, not at all. One mom said to me, she goes, it took me so long to get, I said, well, I'm completely on the other end. I'm willing to say, just tell me so that I can get on with it, and it's going to devastate me. But I went through this at 2. I already went through my morning.
Your morning,
I'm almost thinking, if I'm wrong, what's going to happen?
You're going to breathe a big sigh of relief.
Are you going to have another one to find out? Are you going to?
Holy mother. I said, no, I can't do this anymore. I'm too, you know, I had two, I can't. They're just, these beautiful little things are just way too, you know, every mother out there start when you're 18, you know.
Oh, gosh.
So, you know, it's just like you didn't know when you were young, and now your head's filled with, like, holy, you know, what could be. And I'm just so, you know, if this taught me anything, I told my mother this just now. I said, Ma, I am never going to make another snap judgment about any other child I ever, ever, ever see, because I never knew what could be out there. I never even knew about it until Ryan. I really didn't. I didn't know what really, I heard autism, but I really didn't know it.
And now it's
just opened my eyes, and if it can help somebody else, I know there's a million moms out there doing the same thing. You know, once they are experiencing it, they help other moms. But it's if nothing else, they're so precious, and I'm just so happy that he it's brought me down in so many ways and brought the family together, and I think that's important too, is that when they talk to us, that they treat the family. It's not just the kid, and I know we're giving him, but it's the whole family's affected by.
Absolutely.
I mean, my kid, oh my gosh, my 4-year-old actually said to me, "Mom, I wish I couldn't speak."
Oh.
Isn't that heartbreaking? Because I didn't realize at the time, I mean, he was always so quiet. He would take his puzzles while we were doing speech therapy. I always had it like, "Listen, honey, do your floor puzzles." And he saw all the activities that were going on, and he felt a little bit jealous.
He felt left out.
Yes. And there are sometimes a little like they want to focus on Ryan, and they really can't help the 4-year-old, but they do get affected, and we all are trying to help it, Ryan. And so it's
hard, but you sound like you are so grounded and that you are just taking this, you know, head on, and I just think he's lucky to have you as his mom and his advocate. So you're doing a great job. I want you to email us or call us back and let us know what happens.
I want to say one more thing, Laura.
Go ahead.
If you're closing it down, I want to say one more thing. We didn't discuss this, so I'm just giving you my 2 cents worth, okay? You talked about the evaluation. You talked about a number of centers that you think are really good or you've heard good things about. I'm just going to say from my perspective, what I see here locally, if you're going to go the center route, make sure that you really, you've got that network going. Make sure that you really, really research. Sounds like you're in New York. I don't know if it's New York City, but probably big places, even here in Louisville, are kind of in-house, place that evaluates kids at that age. They have a couple of teams there, and from what I've witnessed, I would say one team is stronger than another team. So, like, if you're going to go that route, make sure that you really get. Normally, they all, you know, this set of you'll get that developmental pediatrician, you'll get the psychologist, you'll get the OT, you'll get the speech therapist. They tend to work together. And so if you go on such and such a day, you're going to get this team. If you go on that day, so make sure you're really getting, you know.
The right team. How do you even, I didn't even think of that. That's a great point. And I don't even know how to, because I don't know anybody that used the McCartan Center or the Cody Center. I have to kind of network that way, too, before I even do it.
Well, you know, I haven't done this myself, but I had a mom recently tell me, because I was speaking somewhat negatively about our local place, and she said, "Have you seen what it says online about it?" And I said, "No." And apparently you can, like, Google the place, and then there are blogs or, you know, people who write in to say, "This was my experience, and it was horrible. This was my experience, and it was great. You know, Dr. So-and-so, OT so-and-so." And so you can get some pretty specific information. And, I mean, here I would say, boy, if I had my child going there, I would certainly want to request a specific team, because they are not, even though they're both affiliated with the same place, they are not, one is not as, you know, I think one does a much better job than the other.
No, that's a good point. I definitely didn't even, you know, any advice on it, I'm definitely going to. I'll definitely check that out, because I do know that there's blogs. I did that with the research on my preschools, and I see people responding with the and a lot of those centers don't even know they exist. They're like, "People are writing that about us?"
Yeah.
Right.
They don't even know. And I'm like, "Yeah, you didn't." I mean, because you just don't. It's not on your website. They're usually posted, like,
right.
I don't know. Yeah. So I will definitely check that out.
Some other place. And then another thing is here, and I only, you know how things are here. I really, and this is, you know, I guess from a provider or a therapist perspective, I value more. There are a number of psychologists who are enrolled in First Steps, and they routinely provide services to, you know, 0 to 3-year-old kids through First Steps. And for in my opinion, I really kind of respect their evaluations more than I do that big agency sort of evaluation. Now, you're going to be told you need an arena assessment, you need a team evaluation, you know, which you're going to get those 4 different disciplines. And there's something to be said for that, but, you know, you've already had speech, you've already had developmental intervention or special ed or whatever they call it. I don't know if you've done the OT route.
No,
but, I think, you know, and this may be specific to these individuals, but I guess I'm trying to say it would be worth your time to talk to either other parents who have been through or are in or have been through early intervention in your area to see if they've dealt with local psychologists in the first or in the intervention program, or talk to your speech therapist, your special ed person, anybody mm-hmm. who you think is good or you think you really respect what they have to say, because, you know, we tend to know who we think is good, you know.
Yeah, you know, right, right.
Yeah, and so, and it may be, here's the problem with getting a diagnosis or not getting a diagnosis. As much as you want that concrete yay or nay, we totally get that, but it is not that kind of diagnosis. That's the truth.
No, I get that.
There's a lot of gray when it comes to kids who are on the spectrum, so it does, that makes it that, it's not like they can run the labs and it's a yes or no, you know, it really
does. Yeah, it's not like they take blood, right.
Right. Unfortunately, it's not that cut and dry, and there is going to be a lot of interpretation, really, of his mm-hmm. behaviors, of, you know, all those things that they factor into. They call it a test, but there's still a lot of subjectivity to that test, no matter who administers it. And so
right.
if whoever is administering doesn't have pretty good judgment, it's not
mm-hmm.
worth too much, you know?
That's right. I know.
So,
if I don't.
Yeah. So you may, and I don't know if you can do this. Here, people can, say, have a psychologist come through early intervention, have an assessment done, or they may come. And I like this, too. I think one of the inherent advantages in having that psychologist with the intervention program is they come to your home. You know,
mm-hmm.
they come.
A good point.
Yeah, they come a number of times. They don't come for an hour to do their little test and say, "Yep, here it is," or "Nope, couldn't be." What the ones here who are good, what they do is they come once, and then they say, "Well, I'll come next time when his siblings are here, and then I may go see him at preschool or Mother's Day out or wherever that child is," so that they really see him three times at least, you know, and really get to observe the behaviors over a cross-section of environment. So it's not, you know, when you go to that place, you take Ryan into a fairly sterile environment, you sit him at a table, and they see what they can get. That's it. At least that's how it is here.
No, it's funny. Yeah, that's exactly. Well, she said to me, you have a choice. You could either have it done at home or at a center where, and I'm like, well, what is the best place? That's up to you. I don't know.
I think home is best, and I certainly agree with Kate. And if you have access to have an independent person to kind of come in and do that and do that sequential assessment, you're going to get a better picture.
That's
and I totally agree
point.
With that and think that that's, I think that's a great point. And so
excellent.
Add that to your list for tomorrow.
Excellent
and,
point. Excellent
and see
point.
If you can do that. And then that way, the other part of that is that then that's covered by your early intervention program, and you might have to foot that big bill on your own.
Right.
That is huge. That was, you know what, I'm glad you brought that up, Kate. That was
yeah.
good.
And if, you know, say it's a disaster, you hated her, him, you didn't like it, you know, you tried it, you still can spend your money and go to one of those places and, you know, see what you get there. And you may want to do that just for a second opinion at some point. But
no, I think you're right. I'd
say he's 2.5. I'd get that free one as long as you're doing your homework and finding out who you want.
Yeah,
who the person is,
because that makes a difference.
Huge difference to me.
Huge.
Yeah. I would not randomly say, I'll take the first available.
Yeah. Whoever.
Get the name of a couple good ones. And then be persistent about getting them. And you'll get them.
That's good. Now, that's huge. That's huge.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a lot of good points today. I got that. I got the role model issue was, I think, a concern. And I think just getting, just knowing that, I just think I got a lot now. That was really, really good.
Well, we're so glad. We're so glad we could help. But please call us back or send us an email. You can email me the same way you did before at laura@teachmetotalk.com and let us know what happens, because we want to stay in the loop and be your cheerleaders through this whole thing.
Oh, you guys are great. Thank you so much, and thank you for taking the time. And I will get back in touch and let you know how it's going.
Okay.
Sounds great. Thanks.
Right.
Good luck.
Right. Bye.
What a great mom.
Woo, fifth baby, can you imagine?
Oh, no.
She's got a lot of energy.
She does. She was great. But, you know, the best thing she's doing is really thinking about this
right.
and thinking about what he needs and really kind of problem solving through that whole stuff so that the, what she's doing for him makes sense to her and that she feels good about her decisions and that it's not just blindly doing what somebody tells you to do when your gut tells you you need to be doing something else.
Right.
So I thought that was great.
I hate to have to disagree with the one who represents my specific discipline, but I just would never say that a child who is on the spectrum couldn't make, I mean, it does sound like it's made very good progress. But
very good progress.
I've seen kids who had diagnoses who made that kind of progress.
Me too. That's why we do this job. Would you do this job if kids couldn't make progress or if you felt like everything was just the end of the road? No way. So I'm not sure that that's I bet she didn't think that through when she said that. So anyway. All right, we're going to switch gears and take another question that I got by email, or I'm not sure if it's email or on the website a couple of weeks ago, but I'm going to read it. It's from a speech pathologist, and it says, I am currently a CFY, and for those moms who don't speak speech pathologist, that means she's doing her clinical fellowship year. That's her first year out of grad school, or her first 9 months out of grad school, when she's supposed to have a mentor and a supervisor who's a seasoned speech pathologist to help her along. So she says, I'm currently a CFY and working in early intervention home-based therapy, which is exactly what Kate and I do. I definitely don't want to be giving bad therapy. Okay, she must have sent this on the website because I think that this was a comment on that article.
How do you know if it's bad therapy?
Oh, really, is it? I think the name of it, the name of the article is something like, is bad speech therapy better than no speech therapy?
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, and she says, do you have recommendations for materials, courses, et cetera, for me? I feel that I have a good foundation from graduate school, but I want to be good at more than just the basics. Okay, recommendations-wise, the reason I did the whole website at teachmetotalk.com is I just felt like there was a big void of good intervention information out there. I think you can Google lots of diagnostic stuff and get lots of stuff on assessment, but I think as far as actually how to, and this is my new little line, I probably shouldn't say it, but move theory to the floor.
Oh, I like it.
I'm using that for another little project. I don't think I can trademark that, but that's going to be kind of my other little thing that we'll talk about later, but there's so little information out there about that when people first start to work in early intervention about how to play with babies. It's all assessment-based, or it's all so consultative. Tell the parents to talk to him. Tell the parents to read to him, you know, without really how to do it. So I would just say that's, you know, not to toot my own horn, but boy, have I put a lot of time and energy into that website. So read, read, read those articles at teachmetotalk.com. I also have that series of DVDs that I think are helpful to even people who have a master's degree in speech pathology, but you're not still sure what you're doing as far as your actual therapy activities. I think I get emails and comments on the website all the time from speech pathologists who've taken those DVDs and not really only to use as a resource for families, but to use as a resource for themselves. So that would certainly be something. Other people that I've attended great workshops, I love Dr. Rossetti, who did the Rossetti Infant Toddler Language Scale. If you have kids on your caseload that are apraxic, Nancy Kaufman is a great person to go hear and talk about treating apraxia. I like Tamara Casper, who's affiliated with Nancy Kaufman now and does lots of signing, and she's got lots of good information about using signs with children who are on the spectrum. She's a great conference leader. Kate, who have you liked?
I liked David Hammer.
Oh, I forgot all about him.
He's kind of an apraxic guru guy. I want to say out of Pittsburgh someplace on
the
East Coast.
He is.
We saw him together years ago, Laura, and that
we
was
did.
My aha, I think I'm beginning to get apraxia moment, and haven't looked back since. He was very, I thought, informative, and like you, he is actually a practitioner. You know, he's
not
a lecturer, he's not a professor,
yeah.
He's, you know, he, I think, may have his PhD, but really, he is in the trenches with kids, working with them all day long, and so I thought his lecture was both, you know, very informative, but also very helpful as far as what does he actually do with these kids. And he had
right.
videos of, you know, not like yours where you're actually explaining as you go. His was just kind of a tape of his therapy sessions. But
right.
that was my first real insight into apraxia, and I thought he was good. So I would put him on there.
Me too.
I actually like that Vincent Carbone pretty well. He's
an autism guy.
Yeah, autism guy.
Yeah.
And he's, was he a signer? He was into signing with.
Uh-huh, and
mm-hmm.
using ABA-like approaches.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some children who really, really need that more structured approach. As far as reading stuff, read Stanley Greenspan for your theoretical background. He's got some examples of how floor time should look and how parents can use that at home. He's got a series of DVDs as well with working with children with autism, but I think that they're expensive and I don't think that that the video quality is that great from what I've heard from other parents.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's certainly reading his stuff. That's, you know, the relationship-based approach for children who are on the spectrum versus a more structured ABA approach. Okay, and then she goes on with this specific question. She says, most of my caseload thus far has been children who are not using many words or pairing words together, and I'm comfortable with that, and my kids are all making progress. I recently picked up a child who, and that means added a kid to your caseload, who's 32 months old and has a large vocabulary and is putting words together in three-word sentences. So language really isn't the concern, but his articulation is terrible. After 2 months with him, and what she means by articulation for our listeners is you can't understand him. He's using lots of sound substitutions or leaving sounds off, and he's just really hard to understand. After 2 months with him, I am still looking to mom for lots of interpretation. He is mainly leaving out syllables, dropping ending sounds, and he also has vowel errors. Ding, ding, ding. I believe we have a diagnosis, but I digress.
But you're okay. not going to go there, are you?
No. So far, I've been working on syllables and vowels. So that sounds great. She's doing the right stuff. She's picked out. That's going to make him more intelligible if he gets the right number of syllables in a word. And that would mean that a kid like this, instead of saying baby, might say bay or might say bee instead of baby. If that kid wants a cracker, he probably says ka instead of, you know, cracker. And even if you said ka-ka for cracker, you would have more of an idea of what he's talking about because he would include the right number of syllables in the words and vowels. And if you've listened to this show at all, you know that vowels are really what help a listener be able to kind of get a clue about what word you're trying to say. And so correcting syllables and vowels are hugely important. So she has done well identifying her treatment priorities. She says, I just feel a little lost with doing artic therapy in the home setting. I feel fine with artic, and again, that means articulation, getting sounds in the right places. Once the child is older than three and coming to my office, my district is currently pushing a no-bag approach and routines-based intervention, which is making me even more uncomfortable. If I could bring my own toys to the therapy session, I think I could think through specific targets, words, and sounds for him to work on, and I would feel a lot better. But I have to go into his home and just wing it and follow the child. Do you experience this? No. No. I don't experience this at all because I'm never going to let any program tell me how to practice as far as that goes. I don't, you know, and our own, and I'm being a little flip about it, but not really, because our program a couple of years ago started that. Natural environments, real push, and that meant that a therapist wasn't supposed to take toys, that they were just supposed to go in and use what toys were available or what materials were available in the home, and the rationale was then the parents would know how to use the things they already had. And that sounds great from a theoretical perspective in that you want to use, show mom and dad how to work with what they already have. However, the problem with that is lots of kids, or some kids, don't have toys that, one, they're interested in.
What do you know about that? That's not true.
That's not my case anymore.
That's,
I should just be quiet
and
let you talk
yeah.
about it.
She goes to the romper room. I go to the trailer park, and they don't have too many toys. No, seriously. I mean, there are places I go. First of all, if they had them, they'd be disgustingly dirty and nasty. Or they just don't have, you know, they have a puzzle with one piece. Or
right, and how fun is that?
Right. I mean, it's
zero.
They are not organized enough where,
right.
You know, and we're fairly particular about our stuff when we, you know, we have every piece, and we have all the characters, and we have all the accessories, and so it would be so futile to try and go in there. And furthermore, beyond that,
and dig around the toy box for
right.
something that you could use. I mean, that really is a big time waster. So when people, when programmers, directors start pushing that, you want to say, no, this is stupid, and here's the reason why. You want to have, you know, you want to be efficient when you're in there, and you want to get your job done, and you can't do that without correct materials and stuff to use. And that's just how I feel about it. And until somebody comes and pulls the bag from my hand, no way would I go into a home without toys. I draw the
and
line.
Even
and
then,
I will not...
we'll probably have them stashed in our rain parkas because we really believe in good toys. But I'll say this also, Laura, that even if you go to a home, and certainly I go to homes that where they have plenty of toys and their toys are in great condition.
Right,
not an
which
issue.
Is most
However,
of my caseload. Yeah,
yeah
90,
you
95%.
You have a lot of those,
yeah.
And I have some of those. But 9 times out of 10, even if they have it, you know what that means? They're not really very interested in it. I mean,
because
part
they've
of,
done it.
Right,
yeah.
Part of we go in there with our bag of tricks or bag of toys is it's new, it's novel, it's exciting. You know, and, you know, we certainly see kids that they give us a message, whether it be verbal or otherwise, I'm sick of that toy. You don't need to bother with that next week. And we know, okay, we need to either change that toy or change the whole lot of toys or whatever it is. But part of what makes us able to ask them to do things that really are fairly difficult for them is that we're really, really enticing with our fun, great, wonderful toys. And just, you know, like you said, I hope I'm speaking correctly, that our system hasn't said we can't, but
right.
they certainly have said that it would be best, you know, best practice would be that you go to the homes with no toys, and there are therapists in our system who do that, and there are certainly days that I like to joke about, wouldn't it be nice just to march in there with your keys and sit down and not have... You know, Laura and I are lugging these big, huge bags of toys, and we have our snacks, and we look like bag women going to these houses, but we do it because we know how important it is and how much more we can get from that kid in that hour.
Well, and even
it.
More importantly, looking at it, now, if I were a program director and hearing this, I would say, now, Kate, you're not really supposed to be directly working with the child. You're supposed to be teaching the parents what to do. Hello, you just answered your own question. You have got to have things that kids are interested in and want to work with you with so that you can teach parents how to do it. And haven't you, Kate, had lots of moms who say, that's a great idea. That's a great toy. I am so happy you showed me how to do that.
Right.
I never, ever would have known how to play with this with him had I not seen you do it. Or they say, that's, you know, I've seen him. We had something almost like that. Let me go show you. But he is not as interested in this with me. And then you can take that toy and say, well, here's the reason why you need to do this, and you need to say this, and you don't have an opportunity to do that if you are digging around in a toy box looking for something to do. And the whole follow the child's lead thing, we could do a whole show about how that has been just the most misused piece of advice that anyone ever introduced into early intervention. And therapists routinely misinterpret that as, I don't do anything adult-directed this whole time. I just follow this kid around, and I just walk around behind him and say whatever I think he might be looking at, and voila, that's therapy. That's horrible. You know, that approach, that perspective alone tells me there needs to be lots more education on a program level with saying, no, that's an entirely wrong approach, and I have to have some materials to be able to do my job and teach parents and model for them how to work with their kids so that they can do this and play and can duplicate these activities in their daily routines. One reason we use food all the time is because, yeah, a kid's probably going to eat 5 or 6 times a day, but I'm not going to use, go get the green beans from the fridge to do that, and I'm not going to always depend on parents to have snacks there either. I'm going to come prepared because I'm a professional, and I've got a game plan when I work in there, and I don't have to wing it because I know how to do it, and I'm going to take my stuff in and do what I do and teach the kid and teach the parents. So I get so riled up when people think about this. You can tell right now my voice and my ears.
I know,
your
southern drawl comes out a little stronger when you're worked up, too. I'm not sure I've ever noticed that because I'm a professional.
Well, it's the truth, though. You would never, ever tell a doctor that he can't have a stethoscope or a thermometer.
We think it would be better if you used something that was natural to the environment. Mm-hmm. That thermometer, but you won't be needing that anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. And so it makes me so mad. I had one service coordinator who is not in our system anymore. She's moved. Really sweet girl. But she's the only person who ever, ever, ever said, I can't believe you're still bringing toys in. And I went off on my tirade. Boy, she was sorry she made that remark. But I just wouldn't let somebody tell me that. And then and I'm not a rule breaker by nature. But when it's a stupid rule, you know, you have to be able to defend yourself and defend what you're doing and defend your practice. And if you're working on articulation or specific sounds with this child, and if he's to that point, it's stupid to go in and not have materials that are appropriate for him. And I'm not saying get a bunch of flashcards or only take books, but you have to be prepared so that you can work toward your goals, or else you're just spinning your wheels the whole time. I mean, there are days when it's pouring rain that I'm not going to take a lot of toys in, but I've got balloons in one pocket and bubbles in the other, and I'm calling mom to say, hey, get some stuff together for us, and hopefully things he doesn't play with all the time, you know, dig some stuff out of the closet for me so that I can come in and don't have to bring the bag and get soaking wet. But oh, it just makes me mad when people think that that's an okay approach. It's, in my opinion, it's not. And sometimes I look at those same therapists who don't do that and think, boy, they're pretty lazy. They haven't even planned for the session.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's
it is. It would be, in a way, it would be a lot easier not to, you know, to just, like I said, march in there with your keys and not have this bag of stuff, heavy bag of stuff. But really, like you said, we'll be the last two in the state of Kentucky with a bag. Maybe we'll be old enough, they'll just take pity on us and say that they didn't realize they changed that rule 25 years ago. But
they better bring more than one person. Let's put it that way. You know, the other thing is, if you took your child into an office for speech, you would never, ever expect that the speech pathologist would sit down with your kid at the table or on a floor and not have stuff to do.
Right.
I mean, that's just crazy. If you took your kid to school, to kindergarten, and you went into an empty room and the teacher says, we're just going to wing it today with whatever's here, you would be so mad. You would say, there's no planning. There's no curriculum. What's up with this? No, I'm not going to leave my kid here. And the other side of that is people say, okay, as a professional, you're supposed to be able to do this no matter what and teach a mom regardless of what's going on in the environment, or, you know, and use what they have. And to that, I just say, you know, treat me like a professional. Let me have my tools. Let me have the things that I know that I need. And then we'll be able to accomplish something. I won't have to sit there and generate new ideas and come up with stuff to do and end up with 10 minutes of a productive hour when I could have 60 minutes of a productive hour otherwise. So take your toys.
I'm just convinced that it was some academic and some ivory tower who came up with that, you know, oh, this is more family friendly. And it's like, yeah, well, the real world says, no, it doesn't work so well. So don't tie their hands on that. So we break that rule. And we think you should too. If nothing else, if she doesn't take her toys to everybody's house, then she could kind of give that mom the toys for the duration of her therapy. You know, just say, I'm going to leave this bag of toys here, keep it in the closet, and we'll take it out when I come.
Absolutely. And I have some moms that are so convinced that their kids get so excited about playing with me and my new toys that they put up lots of their own children's toys and say, oh, I'm only saving this for when I play with her.
Right.
We're only going to do this when we have our little at-home speech therapy. And I think that's a great idea because it does make it more fun and more exciting. And then they anticipate, oh, my goodness, mommy's getting out that bag. That's going to be so much fun.
Right. And mommy's going to play just with me for this special time. And I do think a lot of times kids have access to all their toys and parents
you know, sometimes want it that way because they want their kids to be busy and playing, and, you know, it's not unhealthy. But then when they have them all the time, it's just like I am with blue jeans. I have so many, you know, it's not really that novel. So I guess, you know, if they would just keep some of them out and then rotate them, and I usually try to encourage parents to do that, even if there's no developmental issue, even if it's just because they get bored with them, they're commonplace and they really don't care anymore. But something new, even if they don't, it's not out of the package new, but it's been stuck in the closet or the cubby, whatever, for a month or two, it's new to that kid. So,
right, and they think, I forgot all about this. Oh, that was fun. And then you are able to keep them busy with that for a good long time. So just do what's best for the kid. And in this case, it's you can make a great philosophical argument for this child needs very specific materials because we are working on these sounds to make him more intelligible so that ultimately we meet that IFSP goal of improving his expressive language or his intelligibility or however the goal's written, and you're not going to take my materials from me. And go from there. Because like you said when we were talking about this on the phone, Kate, nobody's going to come strip her of her credentials because she took toys to that kid's house. It is not going to happen. So
I seriously doubt it.
There.
Yeah. She'll probably get more kids because people will be saying, she's good. My kid loves her. Yeah. I don't think it'll hurt her. She just needs to. She's new,
so.
And she's trying to do what's right. And we.
She's trying. She's trying to follow the rules. I know.
Right.
And again, I'm not a rule breaker by nature. That just with that kind of situation, I would think, no, this is what's best for the child, so this is what I'm going to do. Because as a professional, I make my own decisions about treatment. So there you
right.
go.
There you go.
Okay, well, good show today. I'm glad Consetta called and we answered her questions and we got to go off a little bit about the stupid no bag policy. Next week we already have a couple of great questions lined up. I'm thinking that one of those moms said that she might be able to call in, but one of the moms is stationed in the Netherlands and her husband is serving our country right now and she is stuck with no speech pathologist and not getting a lot of help. So I'm so excited about, she's not going to be able to call us, of course, but reading through her emails that she's been kind enough to send me over the past couple of months, so we're going to get to read through those.
Yeah, those are both really good ones. They have lots of levels of questions. They'll be fun.
Yeah, and then the other one is about a mom who's, oh, I forgot what that one's about. It's about a mom who is kind of on the fence about whether her son could be on the spectrum or not. So, but she's kind of on the other side of the issue that Consetta was on today. Consetta wants that diagnosis if that's appropriate because it means she can get more services, and this other mom is more torn, which I think we probably see a little more often. So that'll be a great email too. So anyway, we hope you'll join us next week, Thursday, 2 o'clock, for Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.